Okay, we're going to begin tonight's discussion about Ulysses S. Grant, and the title was somewhat wrong. The title I meant or intended it to say was When Grant, not Why, although we will discuss that also. But just a little bit of background. I think we should start with background just in case there's anybody who's who's watching, who doesn't have background as to a little bit of the Civil War history and who Ulysses S. Grant was. Ulysses S. Grant was a general. He ended up being the general in charge of the Union troops and was credited and the hero for the victory of the Union, although that was probably predetermined before the beginning of the war. But he was the general who helped Abraham Lincoln bring the Civil War to a close. But with that background, a couple of other things important to know about Jews during that time. And although this lecture sounds like it's just historical, there's actually two ways that it directly just, obviously it impacted Jews because it was the first terrible order and probably the worst order in history or the worst law or any decision that was ever made by a body in the United States that was so discriminatory against Jews. But more importantly, there were some other things that came out, and there was something that came out that specifically was good for Orthodox Jewry in the United States, which had dramatic effects for many, many years. So worth talking about. But a little bit of the history. As many of you may know, during the war between the North and the South, there was two sides, and the war could have potentially been won by the South by playing towards the world's demand for cotton. The cotton was king at that time. Cotton was a commodity that almost all clothing was made out of. And the South was a huge producer of cotton. They needed slavery for the production of cotton to make it profitable. But that cotton was what fueled the economy for the South. At the same time, the North needed cotton. They needed cotton for the manufacturing, which was primarily in the North. The North needed cotton, but more importantly, Europe needed cotton. And the South was hopeful that by starving Europe of cotton and they'd have demand for cotton, they'd recognize the North and the North would therefore gain its independence and recognition by the outside world. Fortunately for us, that never happened. But that's a drop of background. The other thing important to know at the point in our story, our General Order 11, which we're going to get to, happened in 1862. 1862 was not at the beginning of the Civil War, but it is long before Ulysses S. Grant he was already a general. He was a major general already at that point. He was in charge of a large area, but he was not in charge of the entire body. He was not yet appointed as the supreme commander of the Union Fourth troops. He was still a very powerful general, but not the highest in position. He controlled an area of that covered mostly in the South. Portions of the South that were controlled by the Union. It included Southern Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, and this area did not have a huge Jewish population. As a matter of fact, all of America. At this time, there were probably 150,000 Jews, which is a very small number, which plays into the whole discussion of when Abraham Lincoln got involved. But that's a relatively very small number of people. But trade, that area was controlled by Grant because Grant was the general, the major general in charge of that area. And the South was desperate for funds. Not only funds, they were desperate for contraband. There was many things that were the North had that the South needed, and the South was willing to trade cotton. The South had an abundance of cotton. There were blockades, so a lot of cotton could not make its way to Europe. So the South had abundance of cotton, and there was a lot of illegal trade of cotton from one side to the other, from the South to the North, and goods from the North to the South. So much so that another general, Tecumseh Sherman, he actually was quoted as many quotes that were very anti-Jewish, but he also had a quote which said, "We cannot carry out war and trade with a people at the same time." He recognized, as did Grant, but he recognized that trade had to be limited because that's what fueled the South. And the thought was, if we starve the South, that was basically the way the South would eventually lose the war, is they ran out of funds. And they were short funds to begin with. And if you didn't allow them to sell their merchandise and therefore get either money or contraband in return, you'd eventually be able to starve the South. So that's a little bit of the background. So what happened? So there was this huge trade of smuggling. Smuggling was not uncommon. It was actually, for the reasons we explained, was very, very common at that point. And there was a tremendous problem of smuggling of cotton to the North and funds and contraband, things that the South wanted, smuggled back to South in trade. And many of this smuggling was done by people in the army, by common peddlers, and the like. Were there Jews that were amongst this group? For sure. There were many, many Jews who were peddlers. In those days, there were a number of successful Jews, specifically not only in Cincinnati, but Cincinnati had a very good example of this, where there was Jewish-owned department stores, or the early versions of department stores, and they would commission these immigrants that came over, Jewish immigrants, and they would send them out to all parts of the United States, and they would be peddlers. And peddlers were naturally people who dealt with goods, and they lent themselves towards smuggling or being involved in smuggling. And although they were certainly not in the majority, there were Jews that were smugglers, no question about it. Was it the majority of the Jews? Of course not. But as was very often the case in history, when the world looks for a scapegoat, the Jews are often pushed as a scapegoat. So what happened was, is very often whenever smuggling was discussed, it was commonly referred to, the smugglers were commonly referred to as Jews. Additionally, there's something that very interesting happened. Ulysses S. Grant had a father. His name was Jesse Grant. He was not necessarily the most scrupulous person. He had a very strained relationship with his father. And there were Jewish merchants in Cincinnati, clothing manufacturers, who had desperate need for cotton. And Jesse Grant, whether it was his scheme or his scheme came up with in cahoots with these Jewish merchants, he came up with this idea. What are we going to do? We're going to go over to your son. We're going to get a permit to legally buy cotton from the South. We'll purchase cotton from the South. We'll sell it in the North. You'll have, therefore, cotton also to make clothing with. And there'll be a huge, there was tremendous profits to be made. There were huge profits to be made. And it's presumed that this really, when Grant's father was found trying to smuggle and being involved in smuggling, is really what set off Grant and pushed this order. So the order, as I mentioned, was called General Order Number 11. And General Order Number 11 was actually intended to, the intent was to stop smuggling. I'll read you the order. If you haven't heard it before, it's actually quite shocking that something like this would have been written. I'll read it to you. It says like this. It was a longer order. I'm just pulled out the part that speaks about the Jews. The Jews as a class, violating every regulation of a state of trade established by the Treasury Department, and also department orders, are hereby expelled from the department within 24 hours from receipt of this order by post commanders. They will see that all of this class of people are furnished with passes and required to leave. And anyone returning after such notification will be arrested, held in confinement until an opportunity occurs of sending them out as prisoners, unless furnished with permits from this headquarters. No permits will be given to these people to visit headquarters for the purpose of making personal application for trade permits by the order of Major Ulysses S. Grant. So you can imagine that this order was not received very well by Jews. The order was issued on December 17th. And the two things happened which made Baruch Hashem this order hard to push through. One thing that happened was the telegraph. There was an attack by the South right after the general order, and the South to attack the North. They realized that communication was very, very important to them, and they cut all the telegraph lines. So that slowed down the transmission of this order. And the second thing was, shortly afterwards, was the Emancipation Proclamation. And that got all the attention, and this order did not receive so much attention. It did not go without any results, but initially it did not have the results that was expected. What exactly were the results? It's difficult to say, again, because of communication in those days. We don't know for sure how many people were expelled. It certainly brought fear and concern to many, many Jewish people. But the best example, and the example of Paducah, Kentucky, was the area that was affected most. There were more than 30 Jewish families that were expelled from their homes. Their houses were ransacked and gone through. They were given 24 hours to pack whatever belongings they had, and they were shipped out of their homes. Something which obviously was very concerning. There was concern by Jews in other areas when they heard about this general order that the result would be the same. Many local generals disobeyed the order or delayed implementation of the order because they recognized that this was a problem. And even the scope of the order was unclear because, as I'm sure many of you know, there were many Jews who fought in the Union troops. As a matter of fact, there were many in Grant's army itself. And by the strict reading of the order, they would have been expelled as well, which obviously didn't happen. So there was a tremendous amount of confusion, but more importantly, there was a tremendous amount of concern amongst the Jews in those areas and perhaps beyond. So the Jews took action almost immediately. Specifically, the Jews of Paducah. They took action. There was actually one person, his name was Caesar Caskell. He actually went and arranged a meeting with the President of the United States, which we're gonna talk about in a moment. But this was very important because this was the first time in American history that the Jews organized and did something actively to affect their destiny on a political level, where they went and lobbied politically. They didn't get right to the president right away. There was a delegation from Paducah that visited with some senators and went to Washington and eventually got entry. But this is the first example where Jewish people organized, the first example where we organized and took matters into our own hands, didn't just accept the order and be expelled like we would have done in many other cases in many other countries. They really actually took action and went and eventually met with the President of the United States. So, Abraham Lincoln. So the meeting with the President was set up. It took a couple of days until that meeting was actually set up. And again, they had to visit with some other people. The background should be the following. Everybody would say, so what's the big deal? Of course the President, he wants votes. The Jewish vote was almost insignificant at that time. Abraham Lincoln, and that's a discussion for another time, Abraham Lincoln had in a lot of ways was very, very pro-Jewish. And again, without a political motivation, because there wasn't. Sometimes, and a couple of years later, there was more of an influx and there could have been a difference in Grant's election, although that was probably not the case either, although he might have thought that that was the case, or certainly other people did. Our numbers don't necessarily reflect how we're viewed. People think our numbers are more than they are. But Abraham Lincoln was not motivated by politics in this case. He had a tremendous affinity for Jews. He never met a Jew in his younger life. His Jews he equated with biblical Jews. It was only in his later life, during his presidency and beyond, well, not beyond, he died during his presidency, but from the start of his presidency and beyond, that he actually developed a very strong relationship. But in his early life, he had never met Jews, but he was very fond of Jews. So this Caskell finally got entry and met with the president, and he wrote which actually are lost to history. He wrote memoirs, which unfortunately were lost to history. But quoted in his memoirs, he writes down what his interaction was. And whether these are the exact words or not are not really important. But he tells the story over like this. He walks in to meet with President Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln, as would be the case also if somebody would go meet with the president, he's briefed by his staff beforehand. They told him why he was coming. So Abraham Lincoln is sitting in his chair. He smiles and he says, and I quote, "And so the children of Israel were driven from the land of Canaan." And Caskill, picking up on his on the play that Abraham Lincoln is doing, he said, "Yes, and that is why we have come to Father Abraham to ask for his protection." To which Abraham Lincoln replies, "And this protection you shall have." Again, whether this exchange was actual or he poetized the response back and forth, what is clear, immediately after their meeting, he telegraphed to Grant that he rescind that order, and he personally turned over the order and saved many, many Jews from being expelled. Caskill went back to Kentucky. When he got back to Paducah, someone was there from the army and said, "Who said you could come back? You've been expelled." To which he responded, "No one less than the President of the United States." And he showed him his rescinding of the order. And therefore, thereby, the order was lifted. Now, again, right after that, or almost corresponding with that, was the Emancipation Proclamation. That had gotten so much attention that this particular story at that point in time was lost to history. It was really, very few people took notice of it. Again, they were in the middle of the Great Civil War. The other thing to consider was Emancipation Proclamation and everything that went on. And it seemed at that point that the rest would have been lost to history. But Grant decided to run for president. And there were many Democrats. Grant was a Republican, like Abraham Lincoln. There were many Democrats who desperately did not want him to become president. So what they did is they actually wrote a public letter signed presumably by a Jew, publicizing to everyone what a terrible person Ulysses S. Grant was for, and they elaborated on the fact that he had expelled the Jews, what he had done to expel the Jews from the territories that he controlled. And initially it got a lot of speed, and there were a lot of people that had reacted that assumed what a terrible person he was. Grant actually publicly apologized for that. There was some back and forth. There were some Republican Jewish people who were involved in politics in the Republican Party who pushed for Grant, and ultimately he became president. He actually served two terms. He was at that point the shoo-in because he was the hero from the Civil War. He was very much respected and loved by the public, and he eventually became president. When he became president, what was interesting was he so much wanted to change that reputation that he went and his cabinet had more Jewish people in his cabinet than anyone before and anyone after for many, many, many years. He went out of his way and bent over backwards to do anything to show his support. As a matter of fact, he was the first president to ever travel to Israel. It wasn't Israel then, but he went to Jerusalem, and he again did many things. He's the first Jewish sitting president to visit a shul during a service. There was some sort of inauguration of a shul somewhere that he went for the ceremonies of the opening of the shul. And it was the first time in history that an American president actually visited a shul while it was in any sort of operation. He publicly apologized. He tried to explain it away a little bit. He certainly said in later years that he would never judge a group by class, but this sort of followed him around. The truth is, by the time of his death, he was recognized as and very much supported by the Jewish community. But this was something that followed him around his whole life. He was quoted by his son as saying, with regards to General Order 11, the less said, the better. Again, because I believe it haunted and followed him his whole life. There's an interesting caveat post-mortem where I believe in a interesting way, he actually very much supported Frum Yiddishkeit in the United States. And I'll explain that. He died July 23rd, 1885. And his death was, well, he was mourned by the entire country. Again, he was a hero. Now he was a president. He died actually penniless, interestingly enough. He tried to write his memoirs. He died. His memoirs were published post-mortem. He was suffering from terrible throat cancer, and he was writing his memoirs to try to raise money so his wife would not be penniless. And he died as or right before his memoirs were finished. They were published after his death or right before his death. I don't remember 100%. But he died, and at that point, he was a past president, and he also was the hero from the Civil War. And he was celebrated by all of America. And by this time, the Jews had either long forgotten General Order 11 or had accepted that he had done tshuva for whatever, however we would understand that. And on July, as I mentioned, it was a couple of days later that he was buried. And he was buried. There was going to be this huge procession. And one of the people that his son, Frederick Grant, asked to be a pallbearer was a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Brown. Now, Rabbi Brown was a reform rabbi. He was definitely not someone who was Shomer Shabbos, but he had sensitivity towards Yiddishkeit and the public persona of Yiddishkeit. So he, even though he was a himself not Shabbos observant, he felt in the public eye, if he was being asked to be a pallbearer, and the pallbearers were then going to go on this procession with horses and whatnot, that he was making a public statement. At that time, a little bit of background. At that time, there was a big push by the Reform. Conservative was just at its youth, but by the Reform, and also rabbis who I guess were forming conservative, that Shabbos should be moved to Sunday, just like the Goyim. We want to be more like Goyim. That was their push. And Shabbos should be moved to Sunday. So they would have said, what's the big deal? Their procession, they would have never done the procession on Sunday because that was the Christian Sabbath. But for the Jewish Sabbath, the organizers didn't take much mention of. He felt, this Rabbi Brown, felt that, you know what, even though I myself am not observant, I can't be Michal Shabbos before Hesia. So I'm going to make a statement. And he made a statement, and the organizer said, we're sorry, we can't help you. We can't allow you to walk. It's a 4-mile procession. We can't allow you to walk, and certainly can't allow you to be a pallbearer. So we're sorry. Your invitation is hereby revoked. He wrote a letter to Grant's son and family, and he said, I will have to forego the honor of honoring your father because I cannot forego the honor of honoring the Shabbos. To which, and I want to read to you, the Daily Granite, which is the equivalent of in like New York Times, the Daily Granite wrote about this story, and they wrote like this, Rabbi Brown is footing it, that was the title, meant that he was walking, in honor of the Jewish Shabbos, Sabbath, they said. And here's their quote. And with every step, he tramples his opponents who wish to transfer the Jewish Sabbath to Sunday. So interestingly enough, in a strange sort of way, post-mortem, after Ulysses S. Grant died, he was involved in something which very possibly was the foundation for preventing recognition that America had of recognizing that Yidden have the right to not be Michal Shabbos and not work. If you remember in that time, talking about the 1800s, for many, many years afterwards, our Bubbas and Zetas were forced to make a decision between working and feeding their families and being Shomer Shabbos. So again, in an interesting twist, it was his funeral's doing, that put in the public eye this concept of that, no, Shabbos is Shabbos. And Yidden are Mekabel Shabbos and Shomer Shabbos regardless. So again, I believe that this whole story has a lot of significance to where we are and where we fit into the political landscape in the United States. A lot of, again, I believe it's a forgotten piece of history. I find it very interesting. There's a whole book. Where's the book? There's a book written by this guy, Jonathan Sorna. He also wrote a book about Abraham Lincoln and the Jews. Very interesting book itself, if anybody wants to read. A lot that I didn't cover, a lot more detail. Again, I didn't write a whole book on it. But very interesting. Ulysses S. Grant, I believe, is an interesting character. Abraham Lincoln is an interesting character. And Jewish history from that time at its infancy in the United States is also quite interesting. Thank you all for listening, and have a good evening, and everyone be safe.